Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Gans, and today we will be studying Sefer Ezra, Perek Aleph, Chapter 1. Sefer Ezra tells the story of Shivat Zion, the return of the Jewish people from exile in Babylonia back to Eretz Yisrael in the Persian period of Jewish history. The phrase Shivat Zion comes from a well-known verse in Tehillim, Mizmor 126, Kuf Chavvav. Shir Hama'alot B'Shuv Hashem et Shivat Zion, a song of ascents when Hashem brought back the captives of Zion. The era of Shivat Zion saw the repopulation of Yerushalayim and Yehuda more broadly, and the construction of Bayit Sheni, the Second Temple. Sefer Ezra is named for one of the leaders during Shivat Zion, named Ezra HaSofer, Ezra the scribe, who in part authored our Sefer according to Chazal, the sages of the Talmud. But Ezra HaSofer does not appear in the narrative of our Sefer until Perek Zion, Chapter 7. Instead, our story begins decades before Ezra himself was active, with the announcement of a Persian decree. But before we can jump into our psukim, we have to note that Sefer Ezra begins with a conjunctive vav, meaning and, signaling to us that this book follows on the heels of what came before. In fact, the first four psukim of Sefer Ezra, the entire opening paragraph, is nearly identical to the concluding paragraph of a different Sefer in Tanakh, Sefer Divrei Hayamim. This literary overlap is known as resumptive repetition. It's when a paragraph is repeated after an interruption or digression in order to resume the original narrative. In our case, Sefer Ezra repeats the conclusion of Divrei Hayamim to pick up the story where it left off. So before we can begin our study of Sefer Ezra, we need to review the end of Divrei Hayamim for the necessary prequel. The end of Divrei Hayamim describes the fall of Malchut Yehuda, the kingdom of Judah, in the 6th century BCE. At the time, the regional superpower threatening Yehuda was Babel, Babylonia. After an ill-fated rebellion led by the last king of Yehuda, Tzidkiyahu, Bavel invaded Yehuda and laid a devastating siege on Yerushalayim. Ultimately, the Babylonians ravaged the city. The Beit HaMikdash, the holy temple, was defiled and burned to the ground. The majority of those who survived the destruction of Yerushalayim were exiled to Bavel. In Bavel, the exiles settled down. The prophet Yirmiyahu, in a letter recorded in Perek Chaf Tet, chapter 29 of Sefer Yirmiyahu, instructed those in exile to build homes and vineyards, to grow their families and be law-abiding citizens in Bavel. By all indications, the Jews in exile followed through on Yirmiyahu's instructions and developed thriving, populous Jewish communities in Bavel, in stark contrast to the smoking ruins of Yerushalayim. Nevertheless, the Jewish exiles held out hope that they would yet return to Eretz Yisrael. Specifically, they recalled the prophecy of Yirmiyahu that predicted national return to Eretz Yisrael after 70 years. But Yirmiyahu had been ambiguous about when exactly this 70-year countdown was supposed to start. Was it 70 years from when Bavel gained regional ascendancy? Or 70 years from the destruction of Yerushalayim, nearly two decades later? All this to say that while Yirmiyahu's prophecy of 70 years provided the exilic community with hope, it also generated uncertainty and confusion about when exactly to expect redemption. Years passed. Bavel was eclipsed by a new regional power, Persia. King Cyrus the Great of Persia conquered Babylon in 539 BCE, and the Jewish exiles in Bavel found themselves in new hands and in a new era of Jewish history. This is the background that Sefer Ezra expects us to know, so we appreciate the force of Ezra Perek Aleph Pasuk Aleph, Chapter 1, Verse 1. Our opening pasuk reads, "Ubishnat achat leKoresh Melech Pras, and in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, lichlot dvar Hashem mipi Yirmiyah, to fulfill the word of Hashem by the mouth of Yirmiyahu, heir Hashem et ruach Koresh Melech Pras, Hashem stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, v'yaver kol b'chol machuto v'gam b'michtav lemor, to issue a proclamation throughout his realm by word of mouth and in writing, saying, Koresh, king of Persia, also known as Cyrus the Great, makes a proclamation in the first year of his reign, meaning the first year of his reign over Babel. This proclamation, says Sefer Ezra, was Lichlot Dvar Hashem Mipi Yirmiyah, to fulfill the word of Hashem by the mouth of Yirmiyahu. In other words, this proclamation was a fulfillment of Yirmiyahu's prophecy of 70 years. Sefer Ezra is written decades after the fact, with hindsight unavailable to those at the time, and our Sefer reflects back on this proclamation as the moment of redemption. Let us take a closer look at Koresh's historic announcement. Pasuk Bet, verse 2. Ko amar Koresh Melech Pras, thus said King Cyrus of Persia, Kol mamlachot ha'aretz natan li Hashem Elokei Hashemayim. Hashem, God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth. Vehu pakad alai, livnot lo bayit b'Yerushalayim asher b'Yehuda. And he has charged me with building him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Mi bachem mikol amo, whoever there is among you of all his people, Yehi Elokav imo, may his God be with him. Vaya'al Yerushalayim asher b'Yehuda, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Viven et Beit Hashem Elokei Yisrael, and build the house of Hashem, the God of Israel, Hu HaElokim Asher BeYerushalayim, the God that is in Jerusalem. Koresh announces that the Jews who were displaced from their homeland by the Babylonians are now free to go home. They are granted permission to return back to Yerushalayim if they so choose, and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. In Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Koresh also encourages those who choose to stay behind in Bavel to support the returnees financially and materially, and to send donations for the Beit HaMikdash. With this incredible announcement, Koresh has seemingly ended Galut Bavel, the Babylonian exile. Historical and archaeological evidence corroborates the relatively tolerant, even benevolent, attitude of the Persians toward their conquered subjects as a way of securing loyalty and stability throughout their empire. An ancient clay cylinder discovered by archaeologists in 1879 records an edict attributed to Cyrus the Great in which he boasts of allowing people to restore their ancestral gods to temples in their native lands. The text of this Cyrus cylinder, as it's known, resembles the proclamation in Ezra Perek Aleph, chapter 1, in many respects, though it is not addressed specifically to Jews and does not invoke Hashem. It seems that the Cyrus cylinder preserves a more general version of this decree, while Sefer Ezra records the specific iteration directed to the Jewish community in particular and invoking Hashem in particular. How does the Jewish community respond to this incredible news? Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Vayakumu Rashei Ha'avot LiYehuda uBenyamin v'Hakohanim v'Leviim. Then rose up the heads of fathers' houses of Yehuda and Benyamin, and the priests and the Levites, L'chol Ha'ir Ha'elokim Erucho, even all those whose spirit God had stirred up, La'alot livnot et Beit Hashem asher b'Yerushalayim, to go up to build the house of Hashem which is in Yerushalayim. V'chol Sevivotehem Chizku B'yadehem, all those who are around them, strengthen their hands, B'chlei kesef, bazahav, barachush, uva behema, uva migdanot, with vessels of silver, with gold, with goods, and with animals, and with precious things, levad al kol hitnadev, besides all that was willingly offered. In response to the Cyrus proclamation, the leaders of Yehuda and Benyamin, the two intact tribes that remain at this point in Jewish history, arise and make aliyah. They head back to Eretz Yisrael along with the priests and the Levites and whoever else is moved by Hashem to join them. L'chol ha'ir ha'elokim et rucho. Notice the same language that was used by Sefer Ezra about Koresh. Ha'ir Hashem et ruach Koresh. Hashem stirred up the spirit of Cyrus. Sefer Ezra emphasizes that Hashem is behind this incredible moment in Jewish history, pulling the strings to facilitate both Koresh's proclamation and its fulfillment. Carrying out another aspect of Koresh's decree, those who choose to stay in Bavel donate gold and silver vessels, animals, and other valuables to support those making aliyah. Pasuk Vav, verse 6, is ambiguous, but it appears that both Jews and local non-Jews donated to support this aliyah. This begins a long tradition that continues for centuries up until today of diaspora Jewry sending financial support to the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. V'hamelech Koresh hotzi et klei beit Hashem asher hotzi Nebuchadnezzar mirushalayim v'yitnein beveit Elokav. Also, Cyrus the king brought forth the vessels of the house of Hashem, which Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Yerushalayim and had put in the house of his gods. Koresh himself donates the kelim, the holy vessels from the first Beit HaMikdash that had been stolen by the Babylonians and which Koresh inherited when he conquered Babylon. The return of these vessels is significant because it highlights the goal of this aliyah, which is to restore the Beit HaMikdash, and also because Yirmiyahu had predicted the return of these vessels at the time of redemption in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Perek Chaf Zion, chapter 27. The Kalim's return symbolizes the continuity between the first and second temples, even as the two showed severe differences as well, as we will learn later in our Sefer. Koresh entrusts the kelim to a leader from the tribe of Yehuda named Sheshbatzar, and the perek ends with an itemized list of the gold and silver vessels that Sheshbatzar carried with him to Yerushalayim. Sheshbatzar is an enigmatic figure in that he disappears from the narrative after Ezra Perek Aleph, chapter 1. In Pasuk Chet, verse 8, he is called Nasi LeYehuda, the Prince of Judah, and Chazal identify him as a descendant of Malchut Beit David, the heir to the Davidic dynasty. This is exciting. Many Jews at the time are probably hoping that Sheshbatzar's leadership will evolve into a restoration of the Davidic monarchy. Yet Koresh, in his proclamation, is careful to grant permission only for the Jews to return to Yerushalayim to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. He studiously avoids any mention of rebuilding Yerushalayim itself as a capital city in Yehuda, and certainly makes no mention of restoring the Davidic throne. Yehuda is still a province of the Persian Empire, and Koresh intends to keep it that way. In fact, one of the disappointing realities of Shivat Zion is that Yehuda remains under foreign control for the entirety of the period. The language of this perek alludes to the first great redemption story in the Tanakh, which is Yitziat Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt. Recall that Bnei Israel left Egypt with gold and silver vessels given to them by their neighbors, just like the Jews of Shivat Zion. In Pasuk Zion, verse 7, the verb used for Cyrus's donation of the temple vessels is hotzi, he took them out, a word we associate with Yitziat Mitzrayim. In his proclamation, Koresh uses the word pakad, another Yitziat Mitzrayim allusion, as Hashem told Moshe at the burning bush, pakod pakadati etchem, I have surely remembered you. What is the meaning of these parallels? There were those during Shivat Zion who refused to believe that Koresh's proclamation was the redemption they'd been waiting for. For one, many believed that the foretold 70 years of exile had not yet been completed, and it was too early to return back home. But even more were deeply skeptical that a pagan Persian emperor could be the one heralding the true Geula. They were expecting open miracles like the Makot, the plagues, like the splitting of the Yam Suf. That's what redemption looks like. It certainly does not look like Persian politics. Yet, by using language reminiscent of Yitziat Mitzrayim, Sefer Ezra makes the argument that redemption comes in many forms, if only one chooses to recognize it. Shivat Zion takes place at the very end of biblical history, as prophecy is fading away and open miracles are becoming a thing of the past. In this way, Shivat Zion serves as the transitional period between the time of Tanakh and the time of the rabbis. One of the central questions of the rabbinic period was, how does God communicate with us in the absence of prophecy? Sefer Ezra speaks to this dilemma, teaching us to find Hashem in world events, to see beyond the ordinary course of things, and recognize that what looks like politics as usual is actually part of the divine plan. Recall Pasuk Aleph, verse 1 of our perek, Lichlod Devar Hashem mipi Yirmiyah he'ir Hashem et Ruach Koresh. Sefer Ezra argues that this isn't just the Cyrus proclamation, it's the fulfillment of a divine prophecy, and it's the work of Hashem himself. Redemption sometimes looks like the splitting of the sea, but not always. Sometimes redemption is inscribed in Akkadian cuneiform, or maybe, in the more modern period, in English typeset on the desk of Lord Balfour. Sefer Ezra teaches us to look for Hashem's hand in history, and in that way, even though Nevuah has long ceased, we can continue to hear Hashem's voice. This shir is dedicated to Lizechar Nishmas Marcy Stern, Mincha Yehudis Bas Gedalyahu. She was a dedicated teacher whose deep love of the Sifrei Nevi'im and Shivat Zion left an indelible mark on her many students.